Your true crime podcast keeps listeners on the edge of their seats. But here's the real mystery. Why isn't it making more money? Odyssey Creator Lab is here to solve that. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on the suspense while our sales team brings in advertisers and revenue. Stop leaving money on the table. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and turn your passion for true crime into real revenue.
It's going to be hot again today. I know last night, yesterday afternoon, it poured, as we all know. And man, I went out to play tennis with Grady, the dog, last night. And it I won't say fall-like, but it felt a lot better than it had been feeling. Bill Cassidy joins us now. Dr. Mr. Senator Bill Cassidy. How are you, sir?
I'm really good, Tommy. Good morning to you. Good morning to the people listening.
Tell me what's going on in D.C. What you been up to?
A lot of stuff going on, trying to get President Trump's nominees through. A lot of obstruction from Washington Democrats. By this time in every other president in history's term, there have been dozens, if not over 50, over 100 unanimously approved, meaning Democrats or Republicans don't oppose. For President Trump, it's zero. There's not a single one that they have unanimously agreed to, so we're just kind of having to grunt it out. And that's okay. I tell people I'm a doctor. I've been on call, so we're just kind of going to grind it out.
But to be fair, y'all did, the Republicans did kind of play a little bit with the Supreme Court nominee, right?
Well, put it this way. Depending upon your perspective, and you can go back and forth on that, but that's actually a separate issue.
No.
The separate issue is that formally, like when Obama came up, I think 100 of his nominees were approved unanimously. And even in the first Trump term, like 57 have been approved unanimously, which means you just get them through. You don't have to worry about it. It just goes through instead of taking like 10 hours to get through.
So your point is it's not major appointments you're talking about here, but it's just procedural moves being made by the Democrats to just slow down government?
You know, the assistant secretary to the undersecretary to the deputy secretary of whatever department it is. Mm-hmm. But there's good stuff, too. Went yesterday to a conference at the White House, sat on the front row, listened to President Trump and his cabinet speaking about a way to do medical records in a way in which they say they've got the 60 top hospital systems, tech firms, medical record firms to come together to allow information sharing, to allow you and me to get our records on our phone, to be able to port it, if you will, to the next doctor we see, even if it's in a different hospital system. We keep control, but we get to give permission to look at it. It helps us, reduces costs, gives us power, more good for him. The president's doing this, and I'm the head of the committee, which is in charge of the same issue. We'll put in some legislation. If this gets done, this would be legacy legislation for the president of the United States.
So tell me what would be different in this and who would be opposing this?
So right now, if you go to Ochsner, okay, and you have your medical records, and then you go and you're skiing out in Colorado and you go to a hospital there, it's going to be difficult in some cases, not always, but in some cases, for your records to be known from one to the other, for Colorado to come back to Ochsner. Mm-hmm. And if you go to a small town in Opelousas, community health center, they're really not going to have the records. So in this case, the sharing would be seamless, that everybody's records would be put into a master file, and whatever was done in Colorado is coordinated with your primary care at Ochsner, and that's available for whoever is seeing you at Opelousas. And right now, we don't have that.
How's that different than what Obamacare did? Because I know the physicians that just were just overwhelmed with having to put all of these medical records, do it electronically. It slowed down how many patients they could see, et cetera. How is that different or better?
And under Obama, billions were put into, like hundreds of billions, were put into in encouraging physicians and hospitals, penalizing if they didn't, to go to the electronic health record. Mm-hmm. And the goal was exactly what I've just described. And that continued to be the goal ever since. But the problem is that the tech companies or the hospitals, particularly the electronic health record companies, kept the records to themselves. Mm. You could have it. You got to pay a little bit more. It's just like a lot of friction that kept it from happening. Now, Trump is so crazy. He says, hey, listen, why don't you come to the White House? And everybody's afraid if they don't, they're going to be on the menu. And his power to convene, to get people there and to say, you know, listen, I'm the president of the United States and I'm willing to do stuff that others won't, it gets them willing to bargain. And so people who formerly said it's my business model to hang on to records now said it's in my best interest to make sure that the president, I'm on his right side, and I'm going to work with him in order to share these records with other people.
Tell me what's going on with fentanyl.
Yeah, so fentanyl, again, a little context. Everybody listening right now knows of somebody who is affected by fentanyl, addiction, or overdose. There's as many as 100,000, depending upon the year, deaths from overdose every year, and about 70% in our country, and 70% of those are related to fentanyl. Now, again, to President Trump's credit, he made it a priority. He got into office. He shut down the southern border, which not only kept people from crossing, but kept drugs from crossing. He got the Mexican president to sic the Mexican army on the Mexican cartels that were making the fentanyl, and then he pushed China to stop shipping the chemicals to the Mexican cartels to make the fentanyl. You know, just a full court press. What the Halt Fentanyl Act is, and it's my bill, I authored it, just got it passed, the president signed it into law, it gives law enforcement one more tool to fight the cartels. Because right now, they can make a chemical just a little different from fentanyl, a little different. You arrest them, you take them to court, they say, hey, this isn't fentanyl. It looks like fentanyl. It may addict like fentanyl. It may overdose like fentanyl. It may kill like fentanyl, but it's not fentanyl. What my bill does, which the president signed, said it might be the most important law he signed this year, it says, wait a second. If it addicts like fentanyl, if it causes death like fentanyl, you go to jail just like it's fentanyl. One more tool for law enforcement to fight fentanyl.
All right, let me take a break. We'll pick it up. We come back. I want to talk to you about flood insurance and executive orders and more. Senator Dr. Mr. Bill Cassidy, our guest. 621 Traffic Now, WWL. All right, 625, Tommy Tucker, WWL, back with Senator Mr. Dr. Bill Cassidy. And for years and years, we've talked about this before, everybody said all President Biden had to do was sign an executive order. He could roll back flood rating, flood risk 2.0, whatever the new flood insurance thing is. And I've been asking the senator about President Trump. He said he could pardon P. Diddy or said he liked P. Diddy liked him and he couldn't pardon him. And I'm juxtaposing quotes here. He said he did have the authority to do that. He didn't say he was gonna. But Senator Cassidy likes him. We like him here in Louisiana. The governor likes President Trump. Why don't you do something about, can he do something about flood insurance rates? Where does that stand? Or could Biden never do anything about it? I'm confused.
So Tommy, first let me compliment you on getting P. Diddley in the same comment as flood insurance.
No, I'm just saying the president. No, hang on a second. Now, hold on. No. Hang on a minute. The president himself said that he could pardon P. Diddy if he wanted. That's what he said. He said, I haven't looked at it, but I can do it if I want. I'm just quoting the president. And then he said earlier, I saw a soundbite of him saying that P. Diddy likes me. So I thought, well, if that's the criteria for pardoning someone or for doing something, if somebody likes him, a lot of people in Louisiana like him, do something about flood insurance. I don't think it's an unfair thing at
first,
all.
No, absolutely. You actually raised this last time.
I know.
And so my staff got several other members of Congress. We have a letter into the president and president's team. It's a little bit different now because we actually have legislation that I've been working on for several years. Mm-hmm. But before, I could never get a hearing on my legislation to actually reform the bill, if you will, to eliminate the need for an executive order, which is temporary, but this would be permanent. Now we've got cooperation from Tim Scott, who's the Republican senator from South Carolina, on the banking committee. John Kennedy's on the committee, our John Kennedy, and others. And so we actually have a fair shot at addressing this issue independently of the executive order. But we have a request in for the president to address it by executive order. We're trying to touch every base to make something happen.
But you were there yesterday. I'm not trying to call you out or anything, but I'm just saying I don't understand, as a Louisianian that pays these exorbitant rates, I don't understand why you can't just say, oh, by the way, Mr. President, while I'm here, let's talk about this flood insurance thing. It seems like an approachable guy.
A very approachable person. I'll tell you that sort of thing is going to filter through several people so that he understands the issue. Mm-hmm. It's a complicated issue. So I get that. And so the purpose of a letter is that it can actually be processed by assistance so that a decision is made which isn't just kind of like, oh, no, we can't do it after all, mm-hmm. but rather, no, okay, we've looked at it and we think we can go forward, or we can if we do this. And by the way, doing this hopefully includes supporting our legislation, which would be a reform which would actually address the issue long term. So we continue to touch on this. I gave a speech on flood insurance this past week, and I do so about every 2 weeks. I want to keep it in front of my congressional colleagues, because ultimately, if we're going to have a permanent solution, it's going to be Congress acting, and that's why I'm pushing it right now. As regards the president, totally with you on that. We've got a letter in. We're processing it. We're going through that process. I'd like him to do it, too.
Somebody texted in about fentanyl getting into the country at legal with legal border crossings. Any way to tighten up on that?
Yeah, so I went to the border, and it's amazing. They'll take an 18-wheeler, and they will fill the tire with drugs. Mm-hmm. And so when they come across the border, they'll pull the tire off, and they'll find it. Now, we've got equipment there, which is X-raying these tires, and doesn't get everybody, doesn't X-ray everything, but it actually picks up some of this, which is how you know it happens. And the one big, beautiful bill, we put, I forget, over $100 billion towards securing the border. And we know that once you shut down the southern border, then they'll begin to go maritime, and they'll begin to go, you know, by even submarines to bring drugs into
our
country.
They're doing that now.
And so we've increased money for the Coast Guard. We've increased money for that whole system of security. And so, yes, we can get it down legally. We put more resources in the one big beautiful bill, not just at the border, but at our coastline and through the airway.
All right, so when it comes to flood insurance executive order, it can be changed by executive order, it can't be changed by executive order, or you don't know?
They can be put on pause by executive order. Now, long term, the next president can just veto it or it expires.
Okay.
So it can be put on pause, and that's what we asked Biden to do, which he did not, and that's what we're now going through the system to ask President Trump to do, too.
Did you go through the same system with Biden as we are with Trump?
Oh, yes.
Okay. Right. Bureaucracy, I guess. Thank you. Appreciate it. Senator Bill Cassidy, we'll take a break. Talk to Agricultural Commissioner Mike.
Your true crime podcast keeps listeners on the edge of their seats. But here's the real mystery. Why isn't it making more money? Odyssey Creator Lab is here to solve that. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on the suspense, while our sales team brings in advertisers and revenue. Stop leaving money on the table. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and turn your passion for true crime into real revenue.
Extreme, we come back right now. Time for WWL First News. 6:45, quarter till 7. Checking in with Mike Strain, the Commissioner of Louisiana Department of Agriculture and Forestry. How you doing, Mike Strain?
Man, I am doing great. I'm fixing to head overseas to Ireland and a little bit of time in England on a trade mission. There are six of us, six commissioners from the United States going. And so it's a solid, you know, week-long trade mission, and which is good. We do a number of these trade missions. I was there as a guest of the British government back in November. We're going, our national association is putting this together. So we're excited about it. And the thing about it is, it's a great way to, let's make a deal. It's all about moving Louisiana and American products abroad. So we're excited about it. We've been getting ready. And I leave tomorrow afternoon about 4 o'clock and get into Dublin about 9:30 the next morning.
Mike, when you talk about, good luck with that overnight, that red-eye flight, that, and God bless you, tomorrow's going to be tough. Been there, done that. So let's talk about tariffs and all of that as it relates to trade deals as you try to make them. Is there an air of uncertainty or what? Tell me how that works.
Well, there is a certain degree of uncertainty, but as we finally sign these trade deals and it levels out, everyone knows what the game is. And then as you lower those tariffs, you know, and we recently signed a deal with the United Kingdom, and that opens the door and eliminates not only tariffs, but also opens the door to other American commodities. You know, around the world, there's lots of barriers put up to protect small entities in those countries, but are disadvantaged to the United States. And so there are financial and non-financial trade barriers, and one of the things we do is to work on, you know, both of those things, especially the non-financial trade barriers, or we call them trade irritants, to get those out of the way so we can move product. The thing about the United Kingdom, the bottom line, end of the day, they import 42% of their food, import into the United Kingdom, 42%. And they need rice. They need feed grains. They need all sorts of, you know, of products. And we want to be there and open up the opportunity for that. And then poultry, we sell a lot of chicken to them so that we can sell it to them. Rice, soybeans, again, livestock products, cotton. And so, you know, we're really excited about that. So that's the bottom line. When these things are finally inked out and they set it at, you know, at a 15% generally doing that, then it opens up trade both ways.
So what are we looking to export to Ireland and the UK? Rice and feed stuff?
Yes, rice, soybeans, different, a lot of poultry. Also, we've opened it up now to American beef, which is a big deal, and cotton as well. And so, and when you start looking at some of those exports and looking what they need, that's what we're looking at in the United Kingdom. They also buy, you know, quite a bit of machinery and equipment, you know, from the United States, that fuel, chemicals, live animals, and so vegetable oils. And we will be meeting with their various entities there. We'll meet with the chief veterinary officers. Those are the ones that set the rules on, you know, what you have to do in order to get those animals in there. We'll be meeting with the United States ambassador. We'll be going to a number of their facilities that we're and looking what they have to offer as well. And so we're really excited about all of that.
Have you been to the Ireland before, Mike, in the UK?
I've not been to Ireland. I've spent a week on a trade mission in England itself, but not Ireland. So we're going to focus on Ireland and a very little bit of time in England this time.
Good luck getting ice in a soft drink. I don't know what the hell the deal is, but man, you all.
They don't believe in ice over there. But yeah. No, maybe we could get a little bit of sugar cane, a little sugar, right, in their soft drinks.
And it's not
good idea. A little cane syrup there.
I wanted to ask you about that too. Sugar. It's not that hot there. It's not supposed to be. It was when I was there. Man, it'll get you crazy if you ask for ice in a soft drink. Tell me about cane sugar. Speaking of soft drinks, and what's going on there, and how could that benefit Louisiana?
Oh, that's going to benefit Louisiana. It already has. We've seen an uptick on the value of sugar at the farm level. You know, sugar went from about 34 and a quarter to 37 cents a pound, the raw sugar. And we're all excited about it. And the thing of it is, not only you saw Coca-Cola now is going to be selling that, you know, product here in the United States. They already sell it abroad. And that's the predominant soft drink there in Mexico. But also now you see PepsiCo is saying, look, we have real cane sugar as well. And then you have different restaurants, you know, that's saying Steak and Shake that we're going to sell, you know, the product made with the real natural non-processed sugar, meaning cane sugar. And we think you're going to see other entities follow suit. You know, so you'll see that, and I think that will lift up, you know, a number of different products that where we'll start looking at using less refined products, more natural products in all the foods that we consume. And I think that is the bigger deal, is looking at a trend towards using these natural sugars instead of artificial sweeteners in many products.
But you know there are a lot of people that benefit from corn fructose, so I'm just wondering how they're going to react to the switch to cane sugar and how involved are they going to be with this?
Well, there's a pushback, as you know, from the national corn growers.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, they'll have to find another avenue for some of that high fructose corn syrup. And I think they will. Now, we're going to have a record corn crop this year, and that's a big discussion about that. Overall, in the United States, over 94 million acres of corn. There's a lot of other uses for corn, for instance, in making fuel, you know, biofuel, ethanol, the ethanol you put in your car. If you get, you know, the 10% ethanol in your vehicle, now we're looking at allowing up to 15% ethanol year-round, and then also feeding more of that to livestock. You've seen the price of beef. And that's feeding more of the corn to livestock and then selling that meat product, you know, beef, pork, poultry, selling that abroad. So there are other avenues that we can find for corn, and we'll be working on that avenue as well.
Do they still have a problem with ethanol and pipeline where you can't ship in a pipeline very far? Do I remember that?
Yes, there's a number of things. What happened with ethanol, it can, if it gets in contact, you know, it pulls in water, and then it breaks down, and it becomes a caustic substance. And that's what happens. That's why for many of your older pieces of equipment, you know, for us, the old farm tractors or many things, you have to use ethanol-free, especially like in marine products. because it can be somewhat caustic. And if your vehicle isn't made for ethanol, then it could damage the old carburetors, but also in contact with moisture, it can develop, can have an acidic layer that will literally eat the tank up. And so that's the issue with ethanol. That's why they can't, you know, they really don't like to ship it long ways in pipelines. And normally when the ethanol is added, it's called a splash blend. They add it as late in the process as they can and deliver it to the tank so that it can be utilized fairly quickly. It's not a product that you would want to, say, to put in your lawnmower and have your lawnmower set up for a while, because it can damage it. That's why we recommend in many of those types of machines, ethanol-free gasoline.
I splurge,
or if you do have it, you put a stabilizer in there.
I splurge with the car. I get ethanol-free gas a little bit more, but I go with it. Somebody texted in. This is not a bad question, Mike, about beef. If beef prices are so high because we're running low in this country, why are we exporting it?
Well, if you look at what the deal is with the United Kingdom, we will buy beef from them and export beef back to them. So it's a two-way trip. So overall, when you look at the beef market, there's always, you know, a two-way trade. And so we really limit the amount of beef that we import, and a lot of that is due to disease concerns. Our export market has been a solid part, that when the beef prices fluctuate, especially if they fluctuate down, then we do have another avenue, you know, again, for trade to sell that. And so, you know, we've been exporting beef to a lot of countries, especially smaller countries, for a long, long time. And here in the United States, you know, when you look at beef, you have to eat the entire animal. So there may be parts of that, you know, particular, you know, steer, you know, that animal that we do not consume much here, and you have to sell that abroad. So, you know, when you slaughter an animal, it's not all, you know, steaks. There are many other parts of that that have higher value than just ground meat, and you have to find a market for that. So a lot of it is selective markets, and especially when you're talking about the large scale, the big entities, the, you know, the multinational corporations involved in the beef industry.
Thank you, Mike. Have a good trip, and top of the morning to you.
Top of the morning to you, and if I see the blowing stone, I'll kiss it for
you're
you.
You're going to have to get upside down to do it, just so you know, but do it. It's a tourist thing. Everybody does it. You have to climb up the top of a castle, get upside down, and kiss it. Thank you, Mike Strain, Commissioner of Louisiana Department of Agriculture and Forestry, 654, 6 till 7, traffic now, WWL.
Your true crime podcast keeps listeners on the edge of their seats, but here's the real mystery. Why isn't it making more money? Odyssey Creator Lab is here to solve that. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on the suspense, while our sales team brings in advertisers and revenue. Stop leaving money on the table. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and turn your passion for true crime into real revenue.